is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I would rather have half those trophies and not enough room at my funeral for all my athletes, because that's what matters. It doesn't matter how many trophies are in the case. It's how many people are sad when you're gone. That's what's the most important thing, because they're going to remember all the things that you gave them, all the ways that you love them.
James Leith is the founder of Unleash the Athlete and former head of leadership and character development at IMG Academy. Leith teaches mental strength skills and leadership development tools to athletes, coaches, and top performers through interactive lectures and team-building activities. James is a coach, speaker, and the host of the Unleash Your Life podcast. He serves people through storytelling and encouraging an intentional life while working with students, educators, athletes, and business professionals. Leith holds a bachelor's degree in communication from Fresno State and a master's degree in performance psychology from National University. He was a collegiate athlete at Fresno State and has coached multiple sports at the youth and high school levels. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hey, this is Brendan Winters from Pro Skills Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable, it's all cloud-based, and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit QuickCut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. You'll want to have a pen and paper handy as you listen to this episode with James Leith, founder of Unleash the Athlete. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are also pleased to be joined from Unleash the Athlete, James Leith, for his second appearance on the Hoopheads pod. So if you're looking for James' backstory, you can go back and listen to his first appearance. We are going to jump right into content tonight. But James, for those people out there who maybe didn't listen to your first episode, aren't aware of what you're doing, give people the one-minute elevator pitch of what it is that you do and why the things that you do, why you're so passionate about them.
All right. So 60 seconds to put in 41 years of life.
That's it.
Ready?
That's
got it. The timer?
Are you good? Pressure. No pressure, man. You're on it. Go.
I'm going to come in last on these ladders. So long story short, I'm a mental resiliency coach, and I work with athletes and coaches and just empower athletes to kind of take responsibility in their role as an athlete. But then also I empower coaches with curriculum. I do a lot of speaking around the world, doing keynotes and just really just helping coaches remember why they coach and how'd I do? How much time do I have left?
That was great. You did perfect. Okay. And let me jump in and piggyback on what you said. For our audience out there, James is one of the people that when I look to improve what I'm trying to do as a coach, and obviously, as James said, I'm not picking up X's and O's from a basketball standpoint from James, but what I am picking up are things that can make my athletes better, things that can make the experience that I'm providing for my athletes better. And I've used a bunch of the things that James teaches with my various teams. I've done presentations for Positive Coaching Alliance where I've used some of his stuff, and everything that I've tried that he's put out there has worked really well. So if you get an opportunity as you're listening to this episode to take some notes and jot down some of the things that James is saying, I can almost guarantee you that if you put it to use with your team, it's going to help you. It's going to help your athletes. It's going to make them have a better experience. And we're going to dive into some of the different realms that James likes to impact athletes and coaches as we go through the episode. So just make sure you're ready to take some notes, because again, he's somebody that when I'm looking to improve what I do, he's one of the first people that I go to. And James, I'm not just blowing smoke. It's honestly true. It's something that I feel like a lot of the things that you do are very, very practical. And the kids that I've coached, whenever I've done one of your activities, they love it. And I've also done one of your activities. I think we talked about it the last time I did the rock, paper, scissors tournament with a group of adults. And that that was fantastic. And people loved it. So we can dive into some of that here as we go forward. As James said off the top, his website is Unleash the Athlete, and he's just got a lot of great resources on there for coaches. And we're going to kind of go through some of the things that he has available to coaches, and we'll give you a preview of some of those things. We're going to start out by talking about resiliency and what it means to be a resilient athlete and how you as a coach can help your athletes to become more resilient. So James, first of all, maybe we need to define resilience. And let's start there, and then we can dive into some of the things we can do to help players develop that.
Sure. Well, just piggyback on a few things that you said. You did rock, paper, scissors. Steph Curry did rock, paper, scissors at a game a few days ago. And the only reason I know about it is because my email inbox was full of the video.
Wow,
so apparently I have become the rock, paper, scissors guy.
Nice.
And when everybody sees it, they send it over to me. The whole reason why I got into what I'm doing is because I started off as a football coach, and I would go to these conferences and I would notice that the character sessions were not very well attended. And if they were, it was all gray hairs. So it was guys and gals who had been in the game for a long time, and they realized that the X's and O's weren't as important. And then you go into the X and O's ones and it's packed, right? So you got people in the back, you got people standing on the sides, and it's crazy. But I had this experience when I was going to high school that my dad told me, you know, you either are on a team or you have a job. And so I just went from sport to sport. And so I played a lot of sports I wasn't good at, and it gave me the opportunity to notice the culture of the team and see how different coaches coached throughout the season. And that gave me a really interesting perspective on how important it is to just really build an atmosphere of excellence, an atmosphere of safety, where you could take chances during practice so that way you could perform at that high level during the game. I think a lot of coaches forget that. They forget how important it is for kids to feel safe and be able to be creative in their performance. Because I don't know about you, but I always played better when I was having fun, when I was in this like childlike state. Not childish, very different, right? Childlike, childish. But when I was in this childlike state, I'm doing things like, I can't believe I just did that. Let me practice that a little bit and then maybe pull it out during the game. And when it came to being mentally tough, I came up with a definition a few years ago. I got my master's in performance psychology. And my definition is, and I don't think I stole this from any, most of my stuff I stole from everybody else. So just be very honest. Like, there's no new ideas on the sun. But I believe that this is my definition. And it's: a resilient athlete is able to access their talent at the highest level that they are capable on a consistent basis, regardless of the situation. Right?
So that's deep.
I appreciate it. Well, let me break it down. You can tell me if it makes sense after I break it down. So, able to access their talent. There's this example that I like to talk about when Brett Favre, was playing Monday Night Football many years ago, and his father passed away. And on that same day, he threw for 399 yards and 4 touchdowns. So despite the pain of losing his father, he was able to access his talents. And then you get to the next part where it's at the highest level. Now, that's very important because you get these like eighth grade teams, basketball teams, they go undefeated. And it's like, okay, show me your schedule. Who'd you play? How are you scoring 80 points to their 12? That's not a good comparison of like how good you are. And there's this longtime boxer. His name's Whitey Beamson. And he would always say, show me an undefeated fighter and I'll show you a guy who's never fought anybody. And now it's important to be able to play teams that are better than you and lose, so that way you can kind of gauge how well you are. If I wanted to beat somebody in basketball, I'm playing a sixth grader. I'm gonna swat him all day long. Like, and how good am I gonna feel about that, right?
Absolutely.
So then you go to, so you got the able to access their talent at the highest level, and then you go to they are capable. Because if you're gonna judge a fish by his ability to climb a tree, well, the monkey's going to win all day long, but that monkey's not going to last very long underwater. And so you have to know where your capability lies. And it has nothing to do with the competition. There's this old adage. It says hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. And that's true in sport. That's true in life. And, you know, your effort is up to you. It's one of the three things that you can control, right? You can control your attitude. You can control your preparation. But you have to give yourself full effort. And nowadays, the kids understand when I say maximum effort, they know that I'm talking about Deadpool, right? So that's kind of like the thing. They're like, oh, yep. Coach said maximum effort. And they know exactly what that means, right? But yep. It's their effort. And so I need my bench guys to work just as hard as my starters, even though my starters are going to probably perform at a higher level. But we're not talking about performance. We're talking about effort, right? So as high as you are capable. And the next part is on a consistent basis, because anybody can make a half-court shot. If you have the strength to get it there, eventually you're going to make it. But what about the guy or the girl that can make it 2 out of 3 times? What about the three-pointer that goes in 5 out of 7 times, right? You got to be consistent on this. And whenever you are like a one-hit wonder, I mean, you and I, I'm going to date myself, like Milli Vanilli, right? Like,
yeah, there you go. You got like, that's it.
You know, Blame It on the Rain, right? You got these songs. Like, they were like basically a one-hit wonder with like a few songs, and then they just kind of faded from existence. But this happens a lot in music and in art, like making movies and stuff, but in sports too. Like, you have one big win. I remember a few years ago, and, you know, because we're coming to the end of football season, Appalachian State beat Michigan.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a big deal.
For sure.
Until the next week. Like, and because there's another game, right? Like, you have to continue to play. Now, Appalachian State, we'll talk about that for the rest of their lives. Michigan moved on. You know, they got other things to think about. And so you want to be able to win on a consistent basis and perform at a high level. And at the end, it's regardless of the situation. So if I have a pitcher on opening day, and he winds up and he throws a strike, there's nothing different about the mechanics of that pitch compared to on game 7 of the World Series. The mechanics are completely the same. So regardless of the situation, can you throw that strike? Can you hit that free throw when you're up by 30 or down by 1 with 10 seconds left? regardless of the situation. And so what I look to develop is resilient athletes, athletes that can bounce back and have that short memory. Now, in basketball, it's a little different than in football. In football, you make a mistake, you've got about 30 seconds to think about it and kind of move on. In basketball, you make a mistake, you got to move on. You have to move on. Like, your short-term memory has to have like a 1 second span. Boom, we're moving on. We're going to the next thing. And then you got to kind of train yourself to like talk positively to yourself. Like, okay, next one's going in. Next one's going in. And so that's really where it comes to being a mentally resilient athlete.
What would you say? Let's work at this backwards. What are some of the obstacles that you see with athletes that prevent them from being able to reach this definition of resiliency? What are the barriers that you frequently run into with athletes that prevent them from being able to live up to this definition of resiliency?
Intentionality. Intentionality in pregame, having routines, right? Going, I teach this thing called the 3-hour shield, where 3 hours until tip off, you are very selfish with your time and your energy and your attention. Right. So you're not on Snapchat, staring at your phone, you know, just getting involved in whatever the drama of the day is. You know, you've told your parents, look, I'm going to turn off my phone an hour to game time. If you need anything, call coach. Like, I'm going to be all me. Like, you tell your girlfriend or your boyfriend, look, I don't want to be disturbed. I'm getting in the right mindset. It sees I call them pirate maps. So all the stuff that I do has these really like cute names and stuff because it makes it easier to remember.
Absolutely. You know?
So the 3-hour shield is you're shielding yourself from the world. A pirate map is where you find the gold. The gold is that mindset of high performance. And so when a pirate map, you know, you go to an island, you take 27 paces north, and then you go south or west for 15, whatever it is. In an athlete's life, it's all right, I get to my locker and I get everything out of my duffel bag and I set it up in my locker and I've got this, and maybe I take a shower, or maybe I drink a half a gallon of water, or maybe I eat a power bar, whatever it is, the music, the intentionality of the music, you know, not just playing the radio or just some random playlist, but like these 10 songs are what I listen to get me in the mood, to get me like fired up. And then to use that until it doesn't work anymore, and then you adjust. And so it's really, it's intentionality. And now this goes from 10-year-olds to when I'm working with the Bulls, and the idea that they need to have a routine that is theirs. Also, I encourage teammates to share their routines. And if somebody copies them, relax. It's fine. It's okay to be copied. Like, man, find your own. It's like, hold on, that worked for you.
You want to come in and talk to my elementary school students about that? It's okay to copy someone?
Well, see, that's the thing, is they need you to say that.
Absolutely.
But then also you need to be like, look, you know that drill that we did, that rock, paper, scissors? I copied that from my buddy James. Like, and I'm going to send him a photo of it. And he's going to be excited. And so all this drama that you have because people are copying you, you got to know that as an adult, we see that as like, thank you. Like, wow.
That's a compliment,
that.
Right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And now you've just explained my entire job. My entire job is to take things that parents and coaches say them from my voice, because I'm an outsider. And so you might need some college athlete, or maybe a varsity senior from the high school, from the fifth to middle school kids, have a varsity senior come in and you just tell that athlete what to say. They could be exactly what you say, but because it came from the athlete that they model, that they look up to, that they're going to be like, hey, you know, Adam said we had to do this. And as a coach, you're like, I've been telling you that all season.
Yep,
but because no doubt. The athlete said it, they might as well be LeBron James, because it's a varsity basketball player. And so you can, what you're doing is you're borrowing their influence, because that senior has more influence over that eighth grader or that freshman than the coach does. It's peer pressure. It's the most addictive drug that our kids ever face, but that peer pressure. And so if you give the athletes what to say, and then they teach the younger athletes, that's how you really start building, the kind of culture that you want to create. Also, bonus is you're teaching that older athlete to be a leader, because you're giving them the permission to speak life into younger kids, which is different than what they would normally do. What they would normally do is be a bully. because they were bullied when they were younger. So they just keep repeating it. But as coaches, what we can do is we can teach those older athletes to not bully the younger kids, but to actually bring them up under their wings and teach them. You know, if a kid goes away to camp and then they come back and that coach doesn't put that kid up on a pedestal and say, teach our team what you just learned, you're missing out on an opportunity. Number one, to get everything that kid just learned. And number two, to give that kid a permission to be a leader and to find his or her voice on the team.
When you're thinking about this pregame routine and some of the athletes that you've worked with over time, is there anything that stands out to you that an athlete that you worked with added to their pregame routine that wasn't normal's not the right word, but something that was maybe unusual that an athlete did as part of their pregame routine that you can remember with somebody that you worked with?
It's always funny when you get like a professional athlete has a stuffed animal in his locker. You know? I had a guy who was at the Windy City Bulls, and he was a seasoned player. He'd played overseas. He never had the real NBA contract, but he was a good player, and he had resting B face. You know what I mean when I say that?
Yes.
Okay. So he had that, but he didn't know. And so he'd make a phenomenal play, and he played the five. He'd play this phenomenal play and bouncing off guys, make it. And then he'd look up and he would just be mad. But I knew he was enjoying himself. And so when one of our sessions, we were sitting there we're waiting for the bus because it snowed and stuff. It's Chicago. But we're sitting there and he was like, I don't understand how come I'm not getting more attention. I was like, everybody thinks you're mad. He's like, but I'm not. I go, I know that. Coach knows that. And your teammates know that. But everyone else in the world doesn't know that, because you have this, when you rest, this is what your face looks like. And I took a picture of it and I showed him and we laughed at it. I was like, that's, you're ugly. Like that's, and I'm joking because I had the relationship with him. Right. But he goes, what do I do? I go, well, you need to smile more. He's like, but I forget. And I was like, okay, why don't you draw a happy face on your hand? Because I noticed when you do a layup, you always kind of clap your hands and you look at your left hand. Draw a happy face on it. He goes, okay. So I forgot about that conversation. About 3 weeks later, I get this text message and he started drawing happy faces on the front part of his shoe, like on the toe part. These big old happy faces. And he was like, have you noticed? And I did notice. I started noticing that something was going on, because he'd do something and he'd look down and then he'd look back up and his face would be beaming. Like he would have this huge smile on his face. And I said, how has it affected you? He goes, well, number one, I'm reminded to smile. Number two, I've been having so much fun. I was like, yeah, because your body's listening to your facial features. Your body listens to what you say, listens to what you do, and it reacts accordingly. So his pregame routine was to draw happy faces on his toes, on his shoes. That's a pretty weird one.
That is a pretty weird one.
It's very intentional for him, because it helped him remind himself to have fun out there and not be so serious. The other ones are, I got to have an outer pop, 10 minutes before I go out there. And it sounds silly, but I remember being a seventh grader and my mom said she was going to bring me a banana at halftime. And I got to halftime and I'm playing football and I'm in the locker room and I'm like, my mom said she's bringing me a banana. And I ran out. I was a sixth grader. I ran out and I was like, Mom, where's my banana? And she's like, it's right here. She gave me the banana. And after I ate that banana, I felt so good. I don't think it had anything to do with the nutrition I was getting. I think because I thought it was going to help me, it did help me. So the placebo effect, the superstitions around routines and rituals is real if you believe it's real. You know, like Michael Jordan wore his North Carolina basketball shorts underneath his Bulls shorts for a long time. You know, people wear the same. And I did that too. I wore my middle school shorts underneath my high school shorts, not knowing Jordan did it, but just like, and so you have all these different things. If it puts you in the right mindset, then do it. And encourage your players to do it. Now, there's always the limit, right? There's sometimes just too much. But you have that conversation.
I think that most every athlete, especially as you get up towards the high school and college level, I think everybody has some kind of whether you want to call it routine, some people might call it superstition, just something that you do that gets you in the right mindset. I think most athletes have something simple. They may not go to the extreme of wearing their previous school shorts underneath their uniform or drawing a happy face on their shoes, but I think most athletes end up having something. And to your point, what it does is it's just setting your mentality to get you in the right frame of mind to be able to play at your best. And that's really what it's all about. And then I think the other piece of it that is probably worth talking about here is when you face adversity in a game situation, whether that could be a mistake, a poor performance, a run by the other team, the crowd is getting on you. There's just things that happen, obviously, in a game that can knock you off of that focus that you may have worked on so hard in the pregame to be able to develop. And now you're in the game and suddenly adversity strikes. So what advice do you have for athletes when that adversity hits during a game? How can they be resilient when the other team goes on a run, when the crowd seems to be against you? What are things that you found to be successful for athletes in those kinds of situations? Because we know that everybody faces that.
Yeah. Well, we have to remember that there's more noise now for a high school and college athlete than there was 20, 30 years ago. There's so many more things asking for their attention. Whereas, I mean, I didn't have a cell phone when I was high school. I had a pager, but that thing died all the time, you know? And so it's a very different world. And when I say intentionality, it's my same answer for something happening bad during a game, is taking some mental energy, some time to think about how will I respond when this thing happens to me? Because if you don't ask that question, you react however it is that you've always reacted. There's going to be no change. And so you have to be intentional about what am I going to do when the ref gets in my face? What am I going to do when I get fouled and it doesn't get called? What am I going to do when coach says it's time for me to go in and I haven't played all season? Like, there are these moments where if you haven't actually thought that it could happen, you're just going to react. And most of the time, reacting without pre-thought is not how you actually wanted to respond to that situation. So if you have, if you make a mistake in basketball, it's the same thing of having like a pre-game routine or ritual. You have a mistake routine or mistake ritual. Every time someone goes up to the free throw line, they all have their routine. I dribble twice. I sit back. I look. I take a deep breath. Whatever it is, you know, I spin the ball. I dribble with my left hand. Whatever it is, that's a routine. And that's what puts you in the mindset to, I'm going to make it this time. And you do it the same every single time. But it's the same thing as like when I make a mistake or when coach yells at me, how am I going to respond? Instead of just reacting in the moment, I spend most of my time talking to high school athletes about interactions between coach and athlete and giving them a different perspective. Okay, coach isn't playing me because he hates me. Okay, probably not. I mean, maybe he hates you, but let's figure out why he hates you. You know, and more often than not, it's like, it has nothing to do with the athlete. It's like the parent is being overbearing, or I'm sure you have perfect parents, and so you don't know anything about what I'm talking about.
No, I have no idea. No idea there.
So we call it a mistake ritual. It's different for each sport, right? And if I have a gymnast that whenever she does like a fault or something, or she steps out, she will literally just like stand there, pretend to open up a door, watch a fake mistake walk through the door, kick her foot up in the air, and then slam the door. And then she giggles and moves on. That's very elaborate. You can't do that after you miss a shot.
No, that'd be a little rough.
And so for basketball players or even soccer players, same type of thing. It's like it's got to be something quick. Maybe with your right hand, you just hit your chest twice. You know, maybe it's I flick my ear once with my right hand. Like, that's just me. And that is a signal to the body that I've thought about it before and I'm going to move on. I'm going to have a short-term memory. I got to move on. Next play. Next thing. Like, or it's the thing, you know, and guys do this sometimes. They'll be like, my bad. And they hit their chest. Like, oh, my bad. Like, okay, cool. But what if it wasn't your bad? You just like made, you know, you missed a shot. Like, not everybody makes a shot. You got to turn it around real quick. So that's being resilient. Resilient is like being able to bounce back. And so having that kind of mistake ritual or routine will help you mentally stay in the game, because you gotta get back in the game. And as coaches, we can see when the kid has lost it, like, dude, you got to sit down. I'm fine, coach. No, you're not. Go sit down and figure it out. But in the game, we don't have time to go over and say, listen, Charlie, here's why I took you out. Because, you know, you just don't look like you're having fun out there. We don't have time for that. Like, we got to move on. And now, Sam, you're in, you know. And so I think talking about this kind of stuff when there's no pressure allows for us to recall it when there is pressure.
I think that intentionality piece is really the key to what we're talking about here, is you have to train your mind when you're not actually in the situation for how am I going to react when this situation arises. And by doing that and by thinking it through and by getting into your routines and developing that process for how you get yourself prepared to be at your best, you give yourself the best opportunity to be resilient no matter what obstacles you're going to face as you're going through and competing in your game or your practice or whatever it is that you do. I mean, you could extend this beyond obviously sports and just think about,
sure,
hey, I'm about to have a difficult conversation with my spouse. How do I want this conversation to go? And I think too often we end up flying by the seat of our pants. And as you said a minute ago, you end up then reacting in a way that if you had really thought about how you wanted it to go or how you wanted yourself to behave during those situations, you probably would have chosen a different path had you thought it through. And I think that's a great lesson. It's something that we've honestly talked about a lot on the podcast with coaches in terms of just how they put together their practices, how they deal with athletes, how they have those conversations about what's your role on the team. And if you're intentional about doing all those things, if you're intentional about trying to build your culture, you're going to end up being a lot closer to your vision than if you just come in with the idea of one day, hey, I'd love to have a great culture here on my team, but I'm not really thinking about that on a daily basis, how I can get it to where I want it to go. And I think whether you're an athlete or you're a coach, being intentional is critical, which can kind of lead us into the next point or next conversation that we can have about coaches trying to build character in their athletes. And I think especially nowadays, almost every coach, if you ask them, what's something that's important to you as a coach? They would talk about, I want to win games, but it's also important for me to develop my players as people. We hear that as a theme over and over again. But just like we talked about here, if you're not intentional about it, it's easy to think that that's what you're doing, but you're really not, because you're not focused in on that. You're not being intentional about how you do it. So let's talk a little bit about how you've been able to incorporate building character into the athletes that you've worked with over the years.
Yeah. So I built a character development program. It's called Forging Men of Character. And in the culture that we're in right now, in the Me Too movement and the equal rights and all the stuff that the conversations that we're having, I really hesitated dropping this, like putting it out, because I wanted to be inclusive. I wanted to be like, all right, you know, here's a character development for men and women. We're good to go. And what I kept coming across is that I believe that men and women are equal, but not the same. And we have to agree that if somebody doesn't agree with me, we got to agree to disagree, because I've coached boys and I've coached girls, and they are very different when it comes to how they like to be coached. And they're different in the same ways. Like every female team I've ever coached was similar in that in the female team, they were different than the male teams that I've coached. They had different problems. And so I finally was just like, look, if I can just help boys become better in their community, I've only ever been a boy. And so, I created this curriculum. So I like to say that up front, because I've gotten some hate mail from people being like, you know, we need to have curriculum that's for boys and girls. And I agree, but that's just not what I was trying to do. I'm trying to give boys, try to make them into better men. And the way I did that was I took the word respect, a word that most boys and most men, live off of. Like, you know, I deserve respect. You respect me. And we talk about respect a lot. I feel disrespected. And so what I did is I created this curriculum that it surrounds itself with the word respect. Respect for self, respect for team, respect for diversity, respect for women, respect for authority. And you can spend 1 or 2 weeks on this curriculum. And like all the curriculum that I set up, it's basically plug and play, right? You got the PowerPoint, worksheets, and everything. And so I spent a lot of time on each one. So for example, respect for self. You got to understand the head trash that you have that prevents you from performing at the top level that you can. Because if you don't believe you can do it, you're not going to do it. A guy in a baseball slump, he hasn't forgotten how to hit a baseball. He just hasn't. Like the belief is gone. You know, it's superstitious. Oh, I'm in a slump. No, you just keep missing the ball. Like, we got to fix something in your mechanics. You know, you go 0-10 from the free throw line. It's like, all right, well, you know, you're 18 years old. You know how to do this, but you've forgotten something. And so let's talk to yourself better. So the art of self-talk is very important. And when you are talking to yourself about what you believe and what your identity is and who you are as a boy or who you are as a man. And this, that specific unit, when it's respect for self, comes a lot from Joel Erman. Have you ever heard about Joel Erman?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So Joel Erman talks about the three myths of man, manhood, right? It starts on the ball field, where it's like, if you can hit the curve or if you can run the fastest, you're the manliest boy in the school. We know that's not true, but that's what we're taught. And, you know, that's the experience of most of my peers. And even when I'm working with kids, I still see that on the playground. The second one is the bedroom. That sexual conquest that happens like in high school and in college. It's like the more women that you can be with, the more manly you are. And that's an empty pursuit too. Like if anybody's gone down that path, they know it's completely empty. And that thirst never goes away. And so and you're using people too. That's a terrible thing. The third thing is the boardroom, whereas we're taught that your net worth is equal to your self-worth. Now, these are three lies that most men have been taught since they were young. And when you give them a different perspective of what masculinity is, it opens up their eyes. So I'll talk about forgiveness. It's like, you know, it's okay to forgive. I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. You know, my dad did this to my mom and I can never forgive him. It's like, well, let's have a conversation about that instead of you just harboring that hate for your entire life. You're just poisoning yourself. Let's have a conversation about it. Let's normalize, like we talked about earlier, copying somebody. It's like, that's a good idea. Why wouldn't I use that idea? It's my idea. No, it's not. You have a Snickers before the basketball game. That's your idea. Snickers have been around for 40 years. So just normalizing these conversations where we can actually honor one another and giving them that idea. It's like the one of the biggest differences that I ever experienced versus coaching girls and coaching boys is the idea that boys, in my experience, and this is just anecdotal, were more about competition than about relationship, whereas girls were more about relationship than they were about competition. And again, that is just my experience. I could be totally wrong, but in my experience, like if there's a guy on the team that I don't like, I'm going to pass him the ball. If I'm coaching girls, I've seen it. Whereas she doesn't like her, she's not throwing the ball to her no matter what. And so when you introduce competition, comes right back around to rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors cheerleader is a great way to introduce competition where you're going against one another and then you become part of the team. Because if you lose, now you're that person's hype person, right? You become their cheerleader. So little things like that and then introducing like, look, you guys were going against each other. Now you're on the same team. Having that kind of emotional flexibility, kids need to learn that kind of stuff. That's really important for later on in life.
It really is. That's so true. I think one of the things that I'm always trying to do, and I think about more these things that we're talking about with character. I think about it with my elementary school students. You talked a lot about respect and kids feeling disrespected. And I hear that all the time. We have a competition problem where kids have such a hard time competing and not either putting down their opponent when they beat their opponent, or if they lose, putting down their teammates because it was their teammates' fault. And it could be, you can then immediately switch the teams and they still harbor this ill will towards one another over what's a meaningless game in a phys ed class. And so to be able to get kids to do what you're describing is something that it doesn't happen accidentally because of what kids, as you said, have been taught, and specifically boys. The problem, I'd say 98% of the time, comes from young boys, that's just what they've been taught. They've seen it. They see it on TV. They've been taught it in their home. They've been taught it by our culture. And to overcome that, it just doesn't happen because, oh, I'm going to wave a magic wand and suddenly things are going to be better. You have to really work at trying to overcome that and put them in situations where they can see the value in their teammates. They can see the value in their opponents. One of the things that I always say, I don't know if you've ever done this, or maybe I even stole it from you thinking about copying, but one of the things that I've done a lot is I've started talking about it at my basketball camp. I'll talk to the kids and I'll say, you got, one of the things that we always talk about is having respect for your opponent. And I'll say to the kids, look, how much fun would it be to play against nobody if you didn't have anybody to play against? So if I said, all right, your team, you're over here at basket five and you guys are playing against, oh, there isn't a team for you to play. Well, how much fun is that? Be thankful that your opponent is there so you can measure yourself against them, so you have somebody to compete against. And I find that a lot of times that does have an impact. It at least gets kids to think about the fact that there's more to competition than just getting to be the king of the hill and then putting somebody down because you were able to beat them.
Yeah, you're talking about – so I got that from Jerry Lynch. I don't know if you got it from me, but Jerry Lynch talks – Dr. Jerry Lynch, he's the sports psych for the Warriors. And he would always talk about how, like, to love your opponent, that your opponent is the most important person on the court because without them, it's just practice. And there's no winner, yeah. And there's no loser.
Right.
But it's also honoring. It's like I was playing a kid. We were playing Call of Duty a couple weeks ago. And I was beating him. I happened to be good because one of my best friends, that's how we do our social time. He lives in Indiana. I live in Dallas. Like, we play Call of Duty. And so I'm decent. And I was beating this kid. And he was like, you must be cheating. And I was like, is that your go-to? Like, what if I was just good? He's like, you can't be good. You're old. I was like, well, that's a limiting belief that you have because I'll smoke you. And if you want to do Fortnite, let's do that next. I'll smoke you in that too. But with this idea of what we're competing against as coaches and as parents, this is going to date me again. You remember Saved by the Bell?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I just saw a commercial for the new one today. And this guy walks in.
The new one's terrible, James.
It's so bad. But here's what I saw.
Sorry, you got me to jump in.
All right. Good work, James. That's a kudos terrible. To you.
Man, I got you in.
Kudos to you. See? Pop culture references do it to Jason every time. Man. That wakes him up.
Jason,
over there.
You probably saw this then. So whoever this kid is, he's like a mixture between Screech and AC. I have no idea what the backdrop is, but he comes in to talk to his friend. And the girl who's, I guess, the main person, the Kelly Kapowski, the Jesse Spano, whatever. I mean, I'm just pulling these names out of 20 years
good.
Ago.
That's pretty good. You got all the characters.
But she turns nice. Around and yells at this kid. And she's like, you're not a part of this. Get out of here. And he's like, oh. And you hear the fake laughter in the background. And I was like, no, that's not okay. Like, that's bullying right there. And that's what the kids are watching. And so they see that and they're like, well, this is a very popular show. It's on Disney. It's on ABC, whatever it is. So it must be how I'm supposed to be. And so we have to compete about that. But also tell me, and I'm asking you guys from the 90s, 2000s or today, tell me one sitcom where it's a husband and a wife and the husband isn't an idiot.
Whew. Boy Meets World.
Okay. You gave me the one show of all of them, because Boy Meets World is amazing. Topanga for Life, like 100%. Boy Meets World is the one show where the husband isn't a moron. All the rest of them, the male in the relationship is a total moron. I mean, you look at the most popular one, Modern Family, which just, you know, finished. And he was a funny guy, but like he was kind of an idiot. You know, and that is so when you grow up, and I know we're not even talking about basketball anymore, but when you grow up and you get in a relationship, you're like, well, all my models from TV, the guy's just an idiot. So I guess I don't have to really better myself. I can just be this moron.
Yeah.
And it's subconscious, but it's up to us as coaches and teachers and parents and all these people that care about these kids to be like, look, that's not real. That's not what you're supposed to be. What's real is you go out and you be the best at what you can be. You go out and you give all your effort. You know, there's this thing where when I was coaching at a school, it got really popular to call kids tryhards. And so if they were like at the gym on time and working out, they would be called tryhards. And I called one of the players out. I was like, are you saying that as a derogatory term? Like, are you trying to hurt their feelings because you're recognizing that they're trying hard? And he was like, well, kind of. I was like, that's the dumbest thing you could ever do for your teammate. He's literally making our team better by being on time, by working out extra. And now the reason I was that kid. I was only good at football. I wasn't good at wrestling. I wasn't good at basketball, baseball, but at football, I was probably good at football because I made all those other sports. But I would try really hard at baseball and I was always terrible. And I'd be like, oh, nobody called me a tryhard. But I see these kids who are like, it's like you're not even allowed to be excited. You're not allowed to be encouraging. And so as coaches, we have to take that and turn the culture and be like, on this team, we love each other. Like in that book, Joe Ehrman wrote with, I forget what his name, but it's called The Season or Football Season or One More Season or something like that, where Joe Ehrman was coaching. And at the end of practice, the coaches would be like, what's our job? And then the kids would all yell. These are high school football players. They would all yell out, to love us. And then the coaches would be like, what's your job? And they'd be like, to love each other. And that was it. That was the team yell at the end of practice. What's our job? To love us. What's your job? To love each other. Boom. So they normalized, one, the word love, which brings up other conversations of, oh, there's different types of love. Yes, that's a problem with the English language. There's only one word for love. I can love ice cream and I can love my wife. Those are two very different things. And so as coaches, when we go through this curriculum I created, the Forging Men of Character, what we're doing, the reason I use the word forging is because these kids are coming along with fire. Like fire is burning these kids to make them into the men of tomorrow. And we have to get in there and make sure that it's appropriate. You know, when I was a junior in high school and my baseball coach made a racist joke and I laughed, I look back on that now. I was like, that guy was wrong. He shouldn't have told that joke. And I mean, I shouldn't have laughed either. But also, he's my model for what a man is. So, you know, what am I supposed to do? I'm a kid. I don't know any better. I know it better as an adult. And so we have to be very intentional as coaches on what we tell these kids. I do this text messaging service where I've got like hundreds of coaches. I send them out quotes and stuff. And one of the things that I said was, I asked, I was like, what's something that rattles around in your brain decades after the coach said it? And I get good responses usually, but this one, I had like over 100 coaches respond. And it was all about like, you know, effort and, you know, give it your all and, you know, be a good person. And my experience as a coach, I'll have an old athlete come up to me and be like, hey, coach, you remember when you said this? And then they'll say it. And I'm like, I said that?
Yeah.
I need to write that down. That was amazing. I don't know if I said it or not, but they're attributing it to me and I'm going to let them do that. But, you know, sticks and stones will break your bones, but the words from a coach will echo in your mind forever.
And that is, that is so true, man. That is
whether
so
it's
true.
Good or bad.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
Like, I had a seventh grade coach, football coach. I go, he told me the reason we lost was my fault. And I was like, and nowadays I'm like, you would have been fired to say that. But he was like, going back to Boy Meets World, he's my Mr. Feeney, right? So he like coached me from sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, my freshman year. And he was like, it's your fault we lost. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you didn't do your homework on Wednesday. You're the one guy where you were the weakness in the team because the other time, you know, we needed you to guard him. You weren't there and we lost. Don't do it again. I'm like, okay. I never missed another game, another sports competition the rest of my career in any sport because of that moment. Because he had the courage to, and I don't know if he was being a jerk or not, but he was right. Like, we lost because I wasn't there. Like everybody else did their job, but my backup wasn't very good. And that stuck with me. It's like, all right, I need to do everything I can to make sure I don't miss out on something that I want to do. That's because of the coach.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because I know that I have things that I remember specifically that coaches told me that I took to heart one way or another. And then I have had the same experience that you've had where a kid has come up to me and said, hey, do you remember when you said such and such and such to me? And I'll be like, I have no idea. I don't remember that. I don't remember that. I don't remember that at all. And I think what's important to remember there as a coach going through the thread that has kind of woven its way through our entire conversation is you really have to be intentional about what you do and what you say, because kids remember it. Now, they may not remember very much of what you say, but there is going to be something that they're going to remember that they're going to take away. I remember when I was a freshman in college and I wasn't playing very much, if at all, and one of my assistant coaches came up to me after a practice and he said, and I can't even remember the context now, but basically what he told me was, you're the most mentally tough kid on this team. And this is, he's telling me this and I'm not even playing. And I remember going back and then sitting in my dorm room thinking about, well, what is that? What's that mean? Like, what's he trying to tell me? And what is he seeing in me that is getting him to say that, even though I can't get out on the floor? And it just kind of made me think, okay, well, whatever I'm doing, I feel like I'm working hard and somebody else is recognizing that. And even though it's not getting me to where I want to go yet, it seems like if I keep doing the things I'm doing, that eventually I'm going to get where I want to go. And I'm sure if I talked to that coach today, he'd have no recollection of having that conversation with me, but here I am 51 years old and I still remember it. And there's a bunch of other things that I could cite in the same way that coaches told me over the years, both good and bad, that drove me in some way, shape or form. And we sometimes forget. We forget how powerful our words are as coaches.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Billy Graham said that. He said, you know, a coach will influence more kids in a year than most people their entire lives. And it's so true. I mean, as coaches, we are the masters of meaning. And so in this thing that we've gone through for the last 2.5 years with the pandemic has been crazy, but we're adults. And so we can be like, you know, it's kind of like this, it's kind of like that, but a 12-year-old kid has nothing to compare that to. And so they're looking to us to give them meaning. You know, if we beat a team we're not supposed to beat, coach has got to give the story of why we did that. If we lost to a team we weren't supposed to lose to, coach gives the story of why we just lost. And so as coaches, we're just storytellers with a playbook. That's really what we are. And so we have to look at these kids and be like, all right, this is something they're going to remember the rest of their lives. Now, there's a lot of pressure to get it right, but also just be yourself. Like, you don't have to have, okay, I'm going to tell a story about when Telemachus crossed the sea in the book of the Odyssey. Like, no, we're not talking about the Odyssey. We're talking about, hey, look, you guys, you know, you didn't play your best. You weren't hustling. You thought you were going to roll over this team and you didn't. So let's take this as a reminder that we're going to play our game, not the opponent's game. And let's take this and not let it happen again. You guys good? All right, cool. High five. Let's get out of here. Most post game talks are way too long anyways. And so let's cut them short. You get 30 seconds, coach. Let them go to Applebee's and watch the highlights on TV. Come on. They don't want to be there. You know, so you got just little things like that. This, my main point is that we have to be as intentional to be better adults to help our kids be one day a better adults.
And I will say, being brief in a post-game talk, the parents on your team appreciate that too.
Oh yeah.
It's a great way to engender goodwill with parents is to have a short post game talk. I know in the instances where we're at some travel tournament and I feel the need to talk for longer than I probably should, and then suddenly all the parents are out there and you can just see their faces. They're all looking at their watch like, we only got an hour between games or this, or we got to get here or do that. And so yeah, if you can learn how to be brief and concise and get your point across, you are going to be a lot more successful with parents than if you're a long-winded post-game speech guy. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I'll echo that. I mean, if you could just be like, hey, you know what? We're going to talk on Monday. I just want you to know I'm really proud of you, and have fun. Try not to get in too much trouble. Go tell your mom you love her. We'll see you guys on Monday. High five. Yep. Here we go. Gosh, like I don't remember one post-game speech in the history of all the sports I ever played for 20-something years. I don't remember one. Or pre-game speech. Now, maybe it excited me a little bit, but kids don't need all the stuff afterwards. Like, let them go be kids. Like, they're done. They gave you everything. Let's move on.
I agree. All right, let's go to some team-building activities. So you have yours divided up into five different categories. So I thought what might be interesting is to give us a brief synopsis of one of your 52 team building activities that are part of your course on Unleash the Athlete from each one of those categories. So I'll throw the category at you and you give us an easy one that is relatable here through our audio format, or as easy as we possibly can make it. Let's start with interrupt. Give me a team building activity where you interrupt your team.
Yeah. So the interrupt section is really just waking up the athlete, kind of setting the mood for what you're doing. And the pushback that I'll get from coaches is like, look, that 5 minutes that you just did for that, I need that for practice. And I'm like, no, because my kids are ready to go. There's a cut between sitting in class all day, dealing with the drama of being an athlete, being a student, to out here having fun and the excitement of being an athlete. So after about 5 minutes, you're good. And it could be something like Simon Says. I mean, it's just everybody knows how to play it, but let's let them win something. So you have, okay, stand on your right foot. Simon Says, stand on your right foot. And then you find that from a 10-year-old to a 30-year-old playing professional ball, they want to win. They want to compete. And so they're going to stand there on their right foot. And then you just make it progressively harder. But what it does is it interrupts that pattern of just like, okay, I'm teacher's talking, we're doing the lecture, I'm taking notes, I got to stop checking Snapchat, and I'm going to make a TikTok tonight. Like, oh, I got all this stuff to think about. But now they're just like, I got to focus because coach has to say Simon Says first.
Love it.
So that's one.
That's good. All right, next category, talk.
Yeah, so when you bond with your teammates through life experiences – it's really important. And so the one that I got, and I stole this from a friend of mine named John Gordon. He says the story, it's about the hero, the hardship, and the highlight. And so if you ask a student, all right, I want you to talk about who's your hero, a hardship that you've overcome, and a highlight of your life, I want you to share it with the team. But what's even better is when the coaches do it, and the coaches become more than just the person with the whistle who shows up with the balls. More than just coach, but they become this adult that kind of transcends the sport. And so now you have one of your assistant coaches saying, look, a hero in my life was my uncle, and here's why. And this is what he did. And a hardship I overcome is, you know, I had a child, and, you know, I lost the child, and it changed me in this way. And then the highlight of my life is, you know, I met my wife, or I got my master's degree, or, you know, I got this head coaching job, or whatever it is. What it does is it allows the kids to see the coach as someone more than just someone who designs the lineup. But it also gives the kids an opportunity to get to know each other. I was at IMG Academy and we did this with one of the football players. And this guy, he goes, all right, so a hardship is I just had a baby 2 weeks ago. And, you know, he keeps on talking, but the rest of us were just like, what? You just had a baby 2 weeks ago? And he wasn't going to tell anybody, but it kind of slipped out because he was like, that baby, my daughter, is now the reason why I'm going to go and, you know, eventually go to like a big school, which he did, and then get picked up in the NFL, which he did. But all of a sudden, people were like, man, he works hard. He's the hardest working player on this team. And he just had a baby. Like, that's mad respect. So it gives the kids an opportunity to get to know one another.
Anything where you can get them talking. And I think in my experience, when I've done similar things and ask questions, I think what it does is you have to sort of train them. And you make a great point of having the coaches participate in that and not just be the person that is listening, trying to learn about their athletes, but also sharing so those athletes can see you as a person. I think that really helps to set the tone.
Sure.
And makes everyone understand that, hey, we're all on the same page. We're all willing to share and maybe be a little vulnerable with one another. And that's really how you can build that bond and build that team camaraderie and really become closer to your teammates. Next category,
Well, let me just pause real quick.
Sure.
So, the things that the kids remember are not the things you think they're going to remember. This has happened multiple times to me, but very specifically, there was one kid. He was a sixth grade football player. We went undefeated for 2 years. He called me when he was in college and he was like, "Coach, I got this assignment and I'm supposed to call somebody and somebody that I looked up to growing up." And so I'm flattered. I'm like, "Oh man, this is great." And I'm thinking, okay, we're going to talk about the championships. We're going to talk about, you know, his touchdown and the winning the championship, all this kind of stuff. And he goes, "Do you still open up the door for Mrs. Coach Leith?" I was like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, she would come pick you up and you'd always run around and open up the door for her and then run around. And like, you guys always look like you were having fun." I was like, "Yeah. How did you see that?" He's like, "Oh, I saw it all the time. And I do it." He's like, "Oh, my girlfriend loves it. My mom loves it. And you know, I just always do it. And I just do that because I saw you do it." And I'm like, "Wow, that's amazing." He goes, "The other thing is, do you still teach the handshake on the first day of practice?" And so I had him for 3 years. And on the first day of practice, no balls, no cones, nothing. For a half an hour, I taught him how to shake hands. All my football players, how to look me in the eye, how to spread their fingers wide, how to cock it at an angle, how to say their name. Like, this is what I would do. "Hey, when I see you in the grocery store, this is how I want you to introduce your mom and your dad or your guardian or whatever it is." And I would teach them that. And I go, "Yeah, I still do that." He goes, "Well, I'm a wrestler." And he wasn't just a wrestler. He was like top five in his weight class of the nation. And I go, "That's cool." He goes, "So when I get up right in front of them and we shake hands and they give me like the princess or the dead fish," which are things that I taught him in sixth grade, he grabs their wrist and goes, "Shake it like you mean it." And he goes, "And I win most of my matches in that moment." He goes, "It's psychological warfare." I was like, "Well, I didn't teach you that part, but that's awesome." That he took something that I taught, you know, 10 years before, 8 years before, and he's using it still. And that's the kind of effect we have on our athletes. And he didn't want to talk. He didn't care about the championships. The trophies are in some case at Sororian Elementary that are collecting dust. He's out there making memories today with stuff that he learned from his coach. And that's the same thing that happens when we're intentional about how we spend our time with our athletes.
Absolutely. That's good stuff. And I think those are things that as coaches are so meaningful when somebody comes back. And again, some of it was stuff that you meant to teach them, and some of it was stuff that you didn't mean to teach them. But it goes to, again, what you say, what you do, the behaviors that you model. Kids are watching all the time, and they may not even react to it in the moment, but here's a kid 10 years later that you're still having an impact. And you can't tell me that that kid's not passing along your impact to other people in his life. And really, again, what's coaching all about? I mean, we all want to win games, but that kind of long-lasting impact on the young people that we get an opportunity to interact with, man, there's nothing more powerful than that. So category three, grow.
Okay. That would be overcome obstacles and learn to communicate. You're really testing my ability to remember my own curriculum. That's good. So there's this one game that, you know, whatever coach is listening right now, you could do this tomorrow. It's called 20 count. And if you have anywhere between 8 and 15 athletes, then 20 is a good number. But what you do is everybody lays down in a circle, their head is pointed in and their eyes are closed. And you the instructions that you give the athletes is, "I need you to count to 20, one person at a time, with no discernible pattern. If I see a discernible pattern, then I'm going to say start over. If anybody says a number at the same time as somebody else, we got to start over." So imagine you got 14 kids laying down and you just say, "Okay, go." And the first one goes one. And then inevitably two or three kids will be like two and be like, "Start over." And then you go one, two, three, four, and then two people say, "You start over." And so no discernible pattern. You can repeat what you did, but it can't just be every other kid or, you know, some kid claps and then they say it. No, 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 none of that stuff. And so what that does is they learn to communicate, and they also learn that little nervousness of like, it's my turn to speak, but I don't know if I should. Because then you can talk about that afterwards. You can be like, "Okay, who's nervous? to say a number. Someone will raise their hand and be like, okay, tell me about that. Now you start normalizing these awkward conversations and you're growing together because everybody's going to learn from that. And all you're doing is counting to 20. It's such a simple game. That's all you're doing. And you, some kids will get it with 5 or 6 minutes. Other kids, you know. But the other thing is, how mad do the teammates get at each other for messing it up? And you can turn that into a lesson of somebody ran the wrong play. How long are you going – how much of the game time are you going to use being mad at that player because we're running out of time? And you got to move on from being mad at that player. And so you'll get these guys are just, it's usually guys, they get really mad. They're like, come on, man, you're not supposed to say 13. And you just kind of observe and let them fix it. Let them handle it. Unless some guy's getting really out of hand. But most of the time, they'll start policing each other. But when do you get that opportunity to have those conversations if you don't introduce some silly game like that? You know what I mean? And,
right. Do it in a way that it's a low pressure environment with low stakes.
Right. And no one's losing.
For sure. And yeah. You're able to, right. And you're doing it in the confines of your practice environment where there isn't an audience. There's no scoreboard. Mom and dad aren't sitting in the stands. There's no officials. You're just doing it and you're able to have those conversations. And then it's like building scaffolding, right? Where you start out and you're making it in a simple situation. And then maybe you do get in a situation where there are bigger stakes. And somebody does make a mistake. And now you got to figure out as a team how you're going to handle that. And if it's the first time your team's ever had a conversation like that, it's going to be a lot harder than if you built those conversations earlier. All right. Entertain.
All right. Now, this is the one I get the most pushback from because coaches are like, you know, we can't be playing these like improv games and stuff. I'm like, you don't understand. Sports is entertainment. Like if it wasn't for the fans at the professional level, we wouldn't have sports. Like it's just, people wouldn't get paid this amount of money. And sometimes you just have to leave room for inside jokes. And that's what this whole curriculum is based on. It's based on the idea that great teams have two things in common. They have a shared communication. So I can be like, you know, 4 and everybody on the team knows exactly what we're doing. And the other thing is they have inside jokes, which is the best part of youth sports. Is those inside jokes. And so I'll give you an idea. Again, I was at IMG Academy a few years ago and I was working with the soccer team and this girl gets slide tackled really aggressively and she gets up and she starts running towards this opponent. And someone from the bench yelled out at the top of her lungs, "Purple duck!" And you saw this girl who was about to murder this opponent stop. Look over at Tate, smile, turn around and walk away. Because the day before, we played an improv game. And Purple Duck came up as one of the things that we made up. And the girls were losing it. They were sitting in their lockers laughing, crying, laughing. Like it was so much fun. And she had that little nugget. Whereas instead of this girl getting kicked out of the game for beating the snot out of this opponent, she saved her. And she turned around and she went the other way. And so when you have these entertainment games, these improvisational games, think of things like Whose Line Is It Anyways? When you introduce that kind of stuff, it gets really, really fun. And so one thing I'll do is like one word story. So you get them in a circle and you'd be like, all right, I need a location. And they'll be like, Alaska. Okay. I need like a place. And they're like, an ice melting factory. Okay. So one word at a time, let's tell the story of the ice factory in Alaska. And so literally one word at each player gets one word and they have to keep the sentence going or finish the sentence and move to the next thing, but they only have one word to use. And the stories get hilarious because then some guy named Howard eating Jolly Ranchers. Like, you know, like, and all of a sudden you're like, who is Howard? But this is what they came up and they can go wherever they want. You know, the only rules are you can't curse. That's it. You can't curse. And the word that you use has to fit the next word in the sentence. It's got to be grammatically correct. So the lesson that you get from a silly game like this is now you're not listening to talk. You're listening to respond. Like You're not just being like, wait, I'm waiting for my turn to talk. No. You're waiting for your turn to respond so that it fits the next word. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And you could see where kids could have a lot of fun with it. And yet at the same time, you're developing a key skill. You're developing an ability to listen and hear your teammates. You're developing an ability to think fairly quickly on your feet, right? Because you don't want to be the person that the word comes to you and you're sitting there for 40 seconds trying to come up with that next word. You got to be thinking, you got to be following the plot of the story. You got to be trying to figure out where you think it's going to go and where you want it to go, which again are all valuable skills, and you're doing it in a fun way. And that activity again takes very little time. And I think, you know, you talked about the objections that coaches will sometimes raise that, look, I've only got an hour and a half on the floor and I can't afford to do this or that. And do it before you get on the floor. Do it, you know, while your kids are sitting there waiting. If you got practice at 6:30, and, you know, tell them to show up at 6:20 and do it before you get out on the floor. There's lots of ways that you can incorporate this into what you do and make it valuable for your kids. And I think these things, again, every single one that I've done, that I've tried, kids really enjoy it. The one that I think about when I think about entertain is I did it with my daughter, who's now a senior, but she was in, I think, maybe 7th or 8th grade. And we did the podcast one where you just throw a topic at somebody and they have to pretend like they're an expert on that topic. So you have like this panel and then you have people talking. That one was my daughter still talks about it. So it's like, you know, we did it 5 years ago and the girls on that team still remember what those topics were and what they talked about. And I just remember them all like cackling hysterically as they're throwing topics at each other. And, you know, they, to your point, they'll remember that. They don't remember how we did in Tournament X that weekend, but they certainly remember the time that we did the podcast activity. So
yeah,
it's just,
yeah,
you know, that kind of stuff is cool. That's really what it's all about. Last category, hype.
Okay. So hype is just energy level. Just get their energy level up. Now, we talked a little bit about rock, paper, scissors, cheerleader. These are very hard to describe for a podcast. I mean, you got one on there that says big booty. It's like, I can't describe that. You have to do it. Doing a simple game of musical chairs. Or getting like free throws. And as fast as you can while they're doing free throws, you have to hurl at them the nicest, most encouraging comments you can possibly think of. And that's like, what? Like, yes, be nice. You have to actually just throw, and it becomes really silly. But what it does is it relaxes them at the free point line. And now during the game, they're sitting there and one guy is like, hey, come on, man, you can do this. You'd be like, hey, your form looks beautiful. Because they said that in practice, and all of a sudden right. He's laughing and he just sinks two free throws because it's so dumb. But we allowed for these games to kind of infiltrate their thoughts. And instead of them pulling memories from, you know, the gangster rap or the GTA that they're playing, all these other things, we give them positive things to pull from. And now they're having a fun experience. And so you didn't win the championship that year, but that was the best season of my life because that coach allowed for us to just have so much fun together. And we did okay.
I think when I look back on what we've talked about tonight and I think about just what kind of experience as a coach that you're hoping to provide for your athletes, whether it's you're the basketball coach, whether you're a coach of another sport, whatever it is, you want to provide the kind of experience that makes your kids want to come back and want to play. And I also think that sometimes it's overlooked that, you know, we talk about, hey, we want to build our team and build the character of our players. We want our athletes to be more resilient. And we look at it sort of from what kind of individual experience are those kids having? What kind of team experience are they having? But it's also important to note that all this stuff, it does help you win because
sure,
when you have a team that bonds together, anybody who's been on a great team that's together knows what that feels like. And it just has a different feel from a team that is separate and isn't together. And when your team's together, it's a lot easier to win games. It just is. And you talked about it a little bit that it's hard to judge yourself based on who your opponent is. And you can put together a cupcake schedule if you want. and probably win a lot of games. And conversely, you could have a really good team and play a really tough schedule. And, you know, you may not have the one loss record that you thought you were going to have, but you can have such a good experience. I think that's something that we intuitively know that, but sometimes when we get caught up in the day to day, it's sometimes difficult to remember, especially the higher the level you go. Obviously, the more you're judged by not what kind of positive basketball experience you're providing, which is unfortunate, but you're often judged by your one loss record. So I think it's important for coaches to know, understand, and I think most do, that these types of things that you can do with your team, with your players, to build that camaraderie, to build them as athletes, to build their resilience, to make your team tighter, ultimately, not only does it pay off in a better experience, but it also pays off in wins and losses.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're going to have more fun being in a childlike state than you are being a dictator. Now, let me say this. If you're a coach and you're a dictator, a totalitarian type, yeah, you could win. You could win every single year, but none of those kids are going to come back and visit you because they hate you.
Yep.
So you have all these trophies. Just like Scrooge McDuck had all, or not McDuck, not DuckTales, but like Scrooge from, because it's Christmas season.
Yep.
Scrooge had all the money and nobody liked him. And that's a terrible way to live.
So
I would rather have half those trophies and not enough room at my funeral for all my athletes. Because that's what matters. It doesn't matter how many trophies are in the case. It's how many people are sad that when you're gone. That's what's the most important thing, because they're going to remember all the things that you gave them, all the ways that you loved them, all the ways that you stepped in as a second father or a second mother or a first father or first mother.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have them. You know, and so at the end of the day, like I want athletes to remember that when they were around Coach Leith, they felt like they could be a better version of themselves. Not that they were scared that they couldn't measure up to some ridiculous, level that nobody can reach.
That's a powerful statement, James. And I think it's one that is a good one to end on. I think it leaves with the type of message that we want people to get out of what we've been able to talk about tonight. Before we wrap up, one more time, share how people can find out more about you, share your social media, give them your website again, tell them where they can go to find all the great stuff that we were talking about, get more in depth into it, buy your courses. Just go through the whole spiel and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Well, I appreciate that. If someone just wants to text message me, 972-236-5924, and they text message Hoopheads, what I'll do is I'll send them a link to, so my curriculums, they're all like $97, but I'll give those three curriculums for $3 or $93 or $97, whatever it is. My assistant do it, but I want to get this in the hands of coaches. And so that's the best way probably to get a hold of me is to text me at 972-236-5924. My stuff's Unleash the Athlete, utathlete.com. I've always loved being on, I've been this second time on the podcast. So I've always enjoyed talking to you guys, and I'm pretty findable on social media, just James Leith.
It's great stuff. James puts out a lot of good content. Just what we touched on tonight is just the tip of the iceberg. So if you're a coach out there and the things that we talked about tonight strike a chord with you, definitely reach out to James, pick his brain, learn about some of the things that he's been able to do, incorporate them into what you do, and you're going to have a better experience as a coach. Your players are going to have a better experience as members of your team, and it's just going to help you as a coach to be better and to enjoy what you do even more than you already do right now. So James, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to join us again for a second time. Really appreciate that. To everyone out there who's part of our audience, thank you for listening. Hopefully you got some things out of this episode that you can take and incorporate with your team starting as soon as tomorrow. So thank you for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.